I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's a tradition like no other, the Masters. Jordan Spieth broke his winless streak last week. Can he win another major? And can Dustin Johnson defend his title from November when they last played the Masters? How is the course different during the traditional date in April? And who are the favorites? Justin Thomas? What about John Rahm? The azaleas are in bloom, and we've got Bob Herrig, the golf writer for ESPN.com from outside beautiful Butler Cabin, to talk to us about the Masters. I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times, along with producer Steve Versnick. Before we get to Bob from Augusta, Steve, the Rays stunk it up again. They lost the matinee 9-2 to the Red Sox. They've been swept now by Boston. They came into that series with a pretty good winning streak. At Fenway Park, but man, there was just really, this was a disastrous series. And, they're off today before opening at home Friday against the New York Yankees. They certainly could use the day off. Look, Yarby's pitched, he started out okay. But gave up some runs early, and then the defense, this is the thing that is, I think if you're a Rays fan, there's three things. They're not doing anything well right now. They're not pitching particularly well. We know that, except for Tyler Glass now. And they're not catching the ball, which is really disturbing because pitching and defense go hand in glove. That's what the Rays formula has always been. And right now, at least, the offense is nowhere. And I know they got Kiermaier out. They got some injuries. But you put all that in a bundle, and you've got a 2-4 start, and they're every bit the 2-4 team they appear to be.
Yeah, they've earned that 2-4 record. It's not it's not a fluke at all. Glass now has pitched well. Everyone else, you kind of go, ooh. I mean, Yarbrough's first start was good. Today was not. You and I were talking before we started recording, and I'm not panicked on the Rays because I trust that over the course of time, their projections, their numbers are probably going to be closer than not. I mean, that's just kind of the way baseball kind of does. You can't judge a season by a week. But I'm wondering if they have enough arms that are good enough. I mean, you've lost Morton and Snell off this staff that ate a lot of innings, and you're replacing them with guys like Waka and Hill and Archer and others, and Colin McHugh, and you're hoping that you're going to put those guys in the right positions to perform well. But there's no easy innings. It just doesn't feel like there's not a lot of 1-2-3 innings on the staff right now.
No,
it seems like there's runners on every inning, and it's, Dave and Andy, I was listening to them today, call the game, and they said there's no clock in baseball, but if there was a time of possession, it sure seems like they're on the field a lot more than the other teams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's not a good thing when you're on the field more and they're at the plate more, time wise, that's not good. And it hasn't been good for the Rays so far this year.
Yeah, it does feel like they're not at the plate very much, as you mentioned, and that's because they're not hitting. They're not getting guys on. When they do, they're not getting them in. And it just they this whole series, they were unable to really turn it. It's a little like hockey when you're chasing. You don't score the first goal, and then you start to press. We've seen the Lightning go through their spell. But at no juncture have they really, outside of the opener, Meadows hits a home run. Glass now pitches great. They're a bullpen. But, blowing that lead the other night in the extra innings was tough. Well,
three times. They blew it in the ninth, the 11th, and the 12th.
Yeah, it was horrible, and it was horrific the way it went down. And then, of course, the misplay in right field. That ball probably should have been caught. Rosarena got turned around. There's nothing easy. The fielding isn't easy. Willie Adames, with a throwing error, but maybe a better first baseman helps them out. It's just so disjointed right now, and no one's playing well, and no one's swinging the bat particularly well. So it looks bad, and that's the way it can look. And you will have stretches like this every year. It's just when they come, you know, in the first six games and four in a row, that doesn't exactly breed confidence. Now, you know, they could come home. They're going to raise two pennants on Friday. The Yankees are in town, so you can bet they'll be gunning for them. And maybe they'll feel them, you know, they'll run the highlight film and say, hey, we're pretty good. We, you know, remember, I remember how that felt. And they'll go out there and they'll mash somebody. But the pitching is going to be the thing. It's always been the thing. And there's just a lot of hope, you know, when you're hoping that Rich Hill has enough left in the tank at his age, when you're hoping that Chris Archer, that his second act will be better maybe than when he left, and he's coming off arm surgery. Colin McHugh has done virtually nothing. You don't have a closer, so you're hoping that Diego Castillo won't blow saves like he did the other day. So there's just a lot of hope, and it's not really production, and it's bad ball. I mean, it's, you know, throwing the ball away and, you know, just not playing sound baseball, getting picked off at times, like bad base running. They had mistakes the other night. So, doesn't look good. They don't look like the American League champions. They're gonna have to remember who they are. And they're gonna have to, you know, it's going to take some leadership too. You know, like that was the other thing. You had guys like Charlie Morton who had been there, done that. You know, he was the guy that was going to stop the losing streak, or he could get out of those jams if they got guys on base. There was a lot more confidence in who they were running out there. And of course, if you got a lead, you had that stellar closer. But I don't know. They don't. I know a lot of the faces are the same. They desperately need a first baseman. They're not hitting. And so it's it all looks bad when it looks bad. But hey, as they say, they play 162, and you were mentioning like last year was a similarly bad start in its own right.
So before we bury him. So last year they lost the opener to the Blue Jays at home.
Mm-hmm.
They then won the next four at home, two more mm-hmm. against the Blue Jays, and then the Braves for two. So they were 4-1. They then go on the road. They lost two in Atlanta and got swept in Baltimore in three games.
So they were 4-6 at that point, right?
They were 4-6 with a five-game losing streak on the road. And that road trip, they did not look very good.
Mm-hmm.
Four of the five games, they give up five runs or more. And there was talk of what, you know, and this is on a 60-game schedule. So that was 1/6 of the way through their season. They were 4-6 and looked awful. And they turned that around. So
yeah,
you can't judge baseball in one week because
no.
You're going to have a bad week. Mm-hmm. Several times throughout a season. I mean, it's the way it is. 162 games, you're playing 5 to 6 games a week, sometimes seven.
Particularly on the road. When you're losing on the road.
Mm-hmm. So now they get to come home Friday. They get to raise a couple banners.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first time they've had fans at home in front of them since the playoffs. What, 2 years ago against Houston?
Right. That's right.
Those two great games.
The electricity like none other, like yes. We've never seen.
And you hope, granted, there's only going to be 7,000 fans in the stands, but you hope it's going to be a lot of that same electricity.
Right.
Now the Yankees are in the building, so we'll see.
Some will be rooting for the Yankees,
Yeah, we'll see. So, but, you know, let's see how they respond now after taking a few punches to the gut this week. I mean, it's, you know, they started off 2-0 and it looked great, and now they've lost four in a row, and let's see how they respond. I mean, that's what baseball is it's definitely a marathon, not a sprint. And they've been through this before, and they do have experience. So let's see how they react and how they adjust. And you know, unfortunately, the hitting looks kind of like it did in the playoffs outside of Rosarena.
It really does.
I mean, you know, they weren't hitting in the playoffs at all. Granted, they had better pitching to back it up, particularly in the starters at that point. So.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Brandon Lau is in a, you know, some of the guys you're counting on. I mean, Meadows had a couple home runs in the first series, but, you know, Brandon Lau needs to hit, you know, and whether he hits home runs or not, Meadows needs to hit. And, you know, Randy's done some nice things. Margot is actually off to a decent start.
Yep. You're going to have to count on him with Kiermaier out now.
Right. Exactly. And so you got that problem. So, you know, it's, again, it's baseball. I get it. I'm a little nervous because I think their bullpen is if not an issue, it's certainly below their standard that they set, which was really high a year ago. But first, you have to get a lead before you can protect it. You know, you need guys to come out and support them. But right now, it's just like they're just out there chewing up innings. You know, and hoping that, you know, in a game that's probably out of hand, that they don't burn through too many pitchers. So it's been hard to watch, but we'll see what they do when they open against the New York Yankees on Friday at the Trop. Mention this real quick, and Bob Herrig is coming up from Augusta, ESPN's golf writer. Tom Brady was on Good Morning America. He filmed this apparently when he went to Disney. I know you've probably seen on TampaBay.com and elsewhere him with the lightsabers, you know, fighting whoever they fight in Star Wars these days. So he sat down with Michael Strahan, and Strahan and him are not only friends, they're business partners. They actually own a media company together. But that aside, not a lot of revelations. Tom's always good in these interviews. And, you know, I thought that it's always interesting to see how he's still driven by doubters. I mean, you know, those who say he can't do something is, and I think as much as anything, you know, Strahan played, you know, sort of a montage of announcers saying, Tom Brady's washed up. He's not going to win in Tampa. Bill Belichick, you know, and you could just kind of see, you know, Brady, he that's fuel to him. He thrives off of that. And so they touched on that a little bit, and he said, look, I still have this obsession about throwing a football. Like, even though he's won all these championships, he's not done yet. He knows when he finishes playing, he can't come back and play again. So he wants to, you know, literally suck, you know, as much marrow out of his career as he can. And he can't blame him for it. Talked about his training in Alex Guerrero and all that. His family's been traveling. They've been skiing. They've been to Costa Rica. They went to the Middle East. I mean, talk about, you know, hey, you got a private jet for me ready. I'm ready to go. So they've been doing all of that. And it was interesting, too, what he said a little bit about BA and, you know, his relationship with him. Just, you know, how he's not Belichick, but that there's a lot of what he learned is there's different ways to do things, and not that one's better than the other, but refreshing would be a word I think he would agree with. And he said, you know, in New England, he had been there for so long that whenever anybody came to the team, whether it was a rookie or a free agent, they were always the, you know, the guy that would introduce themselves to him because he had been there so long, and he had to, you know, sort of be the one that was welcoming everybody. But he said, when I went to Tampa, I was the new guy, and I was the guy that was coming to their team. And so it was totally different. People weren't coming up to me. I was going up to them. But he really clearly enjoyed winning, talked about the boat parade, that sort of thing. It was a fun interview, not a ton of revelations. He says, you know, that he's doing well, and he's approaching. He goes, you know, the thing about football is, no one cares what you did last year. And he goes, that's the way I approached it last season, and I'll be approaching it again that way this year. You know, we got to climb the mountain again and all that. And he's going to go into it trying to prove that he can win another one. So it's a good interview. Enjoyed listening to him. You know, that's pretty much the extent of it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, it's a tradition like no other. You have to talk to Bob Herrig when it's Masters Week, and so we're going to do that. From beautiful Butler Cabin. No, have you ever been? I wanted to ask you this. I've not been to Augusta. It is on my bucket list. I can't believe I live this close and haven't gone. Where have you not been at that golf club? Have you been to Butler Cabin? Have you been to all these majestic places?
No, Rick, unfortunately, I have not. You know, I've stood right outside it. I've stood right outside the Eisenhower Cabin. Mm-hmm. I've stood out there forlornly, maybe hoping somebody would invite me in. No, it's never happened. I mean, like if you can picture it, or if you do see pictures, the one that is basically almost directly to the left of the 10th tee, if you're looking down the fairway, that one's called the Eisenhower Cabin or Ike's Cabin. And that's mm-hmm. where President Eisenhower stayed when he came here. And it's bigger than the others because they had outfitted for the Secret Service. It would probably be really cool to get a tour of that place. But you know, I've asked players of their stories, like on the TVs, Masters highlights run on them. You know, they have bedrooms and kitchens, and they're very like modestly appointed, but they're nice, you know. Mm-hmm. And then there's one off a little farther down off the 10th tee called the Jones Cabin. That's Bobby Jones. You know, when he was alive, that's where he stayed whenever he was on property, and which was a lot. So, and then there's probably, I don't know, there might be 10 or 12 more. They're sort of back behind to the left of 10, and they all look like they've been there for 75 years. Even when they build new ones, they build them to look like the old ones. So no, I've never been there. I've been in the clubhouse many times. Now during COVID, we're not allowed in there. Mm-hmm. I've been in the locker room. We're allowed in the locker room. The champions' locker room is off limits to the media, but I've been invited in a couple times. So that's pretty cool. You know, other than that, you know, obviously I've traversed probably every speck of the golf course over the years, and that never gets old.
I can't imagine what that's like. And you've actually had an opportunity to play it too before, right?
Yeah. I've been very fortunate 4 times, and that's, you know, the treat of all treats, obviously. You know, of course, it's like a first world problem. To play the Monday after you've worked at the Masters is like, it's like, you know, it's, you're sort of like, man, I couldn't be in a worse position to try to play golf and walk. You know, let's be honest, mm-hmm. it is a haul. It's a hoof. Mm-hmm. Very, very hilly, way more hilly than TV makes it look. For those of us who mostly don't walk playing golf because golf carts are the only thing we're allowed to do, to walk a golf course like this, and then you're kind of nervous. I mean, you're like on this kind of sacred ground. You don't want to be chopping it all over the place. So, you know, but it's, believe me, I've played in like, it rained the whole time. It's terrific no matter what. It's just really cool.
Yeah, I can't imagine. I literally could not get it off the first tee, even if I was playing a lot. I couldn't do that. I'd be too nervous for sure. Let me ask you before we get started. Of course, one golfer that's not there will be Tiger Woods, and the whole world was, you know, held its breath. You know, when Tiger had the accident in California, I know not a lot is known about his condition, but it must be. He must be talked about this week as much as any week, right? 5-time Masters champion, not being there seems weird. I saw where Fred Couples said something about that the other day. So what do we know just in general about Tiger's condition and how he's doing? And, you know, I guess golf is the furthest thing maybe right now from where he's headed.
Yeah, I mean, it probably is. Justin Thomas said today that he actually visited him last week, and I take that to be a good sign. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that he would allow somebody to come see him, not that Justin Thomas is going to tell us everything about how he looked, but you know, I think if it were, you know, like if it were so bad that he, you know, he wouldn't let somebody like that visit, you know, somebody that's kind of, even though they're friendly, you know, it might have been a while. So that's a good sign. He also said that, you know, he's been dismayed by some of the conjecture about his injuries and what might mm-hmm. be going on. And I take that to be a good sign. Like, so maybe mm-hmm. that means things aren't as dire as they've been portrayed. Of course, though, you know, Tiger's camp sort of, you know, doesn't help by not telling us anything. So, right. So obviously speculation runs when there's no real news. Mm-hmm. But you know, the injuries that have been reported are bad enough. Right. It sounds like his right foot has been hurt pretty badly. There's a lot of broken bones. Mm-hmm. The broken bones in his leg are going to heal. You know, the femur, and there was a rod placed in there. Mm-hmm. I think the concern is more the foot, you know, and how is that going to come back? And, you know, he's 45 now, you know, you're talking a year from now, if he's ready to play, he'll be 46. And will he really be ready to play? I mean, it's, do golf is kind of a tough one to even think about at this point. It's 6 weeks ago today that the injury occurred, or that the accident occurred. And, you know, it's obviously months and months ahead, but, you know, trying to hope for the best. I think you just want him to have a good quality of life. That's the irony to me, is 4 years ago, actually it would have been like 4 years ago around this time, is when he, just right after the 2017 Masters, which he couldn't play, is when he had the spinal fusion surgery. That was sort of make or break. I mean, it was going to possibly end his career, or allow him to have a chance. Mm-hmm. But he didn't do it for the golf. He did it for quality of life. You know, he just couldn't.
Right.
He just was miserable. You know, he could barely move. And so it took care of that. And then you have something like this happen, you know, which is almost ending of life. And, you know, he's been through a lot when it comes to injuries. That's for sure.
Yeah, certainly has. But he's gained perspective from that. I know he will in this instance. I wanted to ask you, and I promise we'll get to this week's Masters, but in golf in general, and look, you cover it for a living, so none of this has been normal, right, in terms of you know, the lack of access, Zoom calls, all of that. We've all sort of experienced that. But for the players themselves, what was 2020 like, in the sense that there were no fans for the most part, or very few? And, you know, golfers, even though they're singularly focused on every shot, they're performers. And I wonder, did it hurt some? Did it help others? What was the adjustment that they had to make being on the course without the galleries?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think these guys all miss fans and miss the commotion. And certainly I thought that that it offered a unique look, because this place is typically packed, and it's one of the hardest places to see anything, frankly. You know, there's so many people. You have to really work hard to see, and, you know, you have to maneuver, and you maybe try to get in grandstands. And last year they didn't even have ropes up. I mean, those of us who were out there, you could walk right up to a tee. I mean, I'd be, you know, 5 yards from a guy hitting a tee shot. That was pretty cool, but, you know, it kind of got old after one day. You know, you like the noise, you like the cheering, you like the sound. Certainly I think that was a benefit. There was a couple of young guys that were up there behind Dustin Johnson, Cameron Smith, and Sung J-M, a golfer from South Korea. You know, they were close. And I think not having that noise and that pressure probably helped them. Playing the back nine on Sunday when you're in contention at the Masters is a nerve-wracking deal.
Yeah.
And they're just going around like it's a member guest, you know. And I'm sure they felt the pressure, but you're human if you don't hear the cheers going up for somebody somewhere else that, you know, they've done something big. And so it's not going to be normal this year, but it's going to be better. And there's going to be 7,000, 8,000, 10,000 people here. They won't say, it's just going to be all by guess. But, you know, I've seen a good number here during the practice rounds. They're going to have one of the merchandise things open. It's a little bit more back to the way that we're all sort of hoping it gets to here pretty soon, with, you know, with the team sports being able to bring people back. They're just unlucky here in that, you know, when they postponed to November back in April of last year, basically the week of what was supposed to be the Masters last year is when they said, we're going to wait till November. Mm-hmm. And you know they thought everything would be fine by then.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing to think that a year later it's still not fine to the point where they can have a full house.
Yeah.
I mean, people have to wear masks watching this even outside, you know. So but obviously there's bigger problems than that in the world. But in terms of sports, in a golf tournament like this, it's been disappointing, obviously. It's just not the same.
Yeah. Well, it is a cathedral. You know, Dustin Johnson won this tournament that you mentioned, played just back in November. I'm curious how, you know, maybe the azaleas weren't blooming, but how different was the course? How differently did it play, the conditions, than they will experience traditionally, you know, this week?
Yeah, it's a big difference. I mean, most of them said you have to kind of throw everything out from then. In fact, they said in November you had to throw everything we know about it out. It's just, you know, agronomy being what it is, it's different in November than it is in April. And I mean, you could say that for Florida. But I mean, here especially, because of the way they operate, they close in the summer. And, you know, they let the fairways basically go dormant. You know, in fact, they sometimes will actually shave them off and let them regrow. And so they have a Bermuda grass fairways like we have in Florida, but they overseed them with rye in the fall, which is what makes it look green. And you know, we do that too. And down in Florida, you know, that's why in the wintertime when you drive by a golf course and it's all green, it's because of the rye grass has been planted. Well, they put it down in September usually, and it takes a little while for that to take hold and to get solid. And in November, it just wasn't quite as it is now. You know, it's had another 5 months to come in. Even if they have cold weather, it's different than it is in November. It was a little thin. It was kind of soft. They got rain. The greens were soft. Mickelson talked about this today. He said, you know, the greens are nothing like they were in November. You could hit shots that weren't going to move. He goes, that's not the case now. Now, we've had really nice weather all week. It got cold over the weekend and it was windy, so that dries it out. There's been no rain yet. There probably will be some. But, I mean, a firm, fast golf course is always what separates the best players, because when it's soft, even though it plays longer, your miss hits are going to stop. They're not going to roll through the fairway. They're going to stop on greens. Whereas the best players who strike it the best have to and are the most precise, they are the ones who are going to benefit because you can't mess around too much on these greens. If you miss them, they're going to go off.
Right. It's and we've watched through the years how with Tiger Woods, it was about knowing where to miss as much as knowing you know, where to attack flags and things like that. I wanted to ask you, you know, I watched with great interest last weekend, Sunday, as a matter of fact, Jordan Spieth win a golf tournament, which doesn't sound like it should be a headline, but it is. And, you know, I didn't realize how long he had gone, how many tournaments he had played without winning, because all you remember is him having three major titles by the time he was, what, 25 years old, it seemed. I've seen him struggle. You know, the putting got away from him a lot of his whole game. I think he had to sort of recraft. But where is he now, and sort of what process has he had to go through to get himself back in the champion circle, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, it was a long time. I mean, he was number one in the world. He won two majors in 15. He contended in all four. He won the British Open in 17. He was the 54-hole leader at the British in 18. And after that, he barely contended again. Like in since the 2019 PGA, where he finished third, which is now almost 2 years ago, he really had not been a contender in any tournament until this spring, this winter. Finally got it going at Phoenix, where he was the 54-hole leader, and he finished fourth there. And the next week, he finished third at Pebble Beach, and he was fourth at Bay Hill. You know, he finally started finding some form. I mean, he missed a cut at Torrey Pines in January, and he had dropped to 92nd in the world. And you know, he's had putting issues. He disclosed a couple of weeks ago that he hurt his thumb in 2018, or his hand, I guess, his hand. He had some sort of a bone issue in his hand that he did not get fixed. And he tried to sort of just play around it. And his coach was sort of advocating a grip change that he didn't want to do because it hurt. And so he didn't do it. And so then, you know, he started, you know, his driving accuracy was like 190th on tour. His, you know, everybody thinks of his putting, but really his iron play is his strength. And he wasn't hitting greens. And, you know, it all added up to bad scores and not contending, you know. But he, you know, he's only 27. It's crazy. He's only 27 and he, you know, he stuck with his team. He didn't fire his coach or his caddy or his trainer or his agent or his, you know, the psychologist or whatever else he's got in his entourage. He stuck with them all and he decided, look, it's on me. I got to get through this. And he did, you know, and, you know, he was telling us yesterday, I'm really not back to where I was. You know, I've got a long way to go to get back to that. It's just nice to have some putts go in. It's nice to have some success and get some confidence.
Yeah, we'll see if that confidence can carry into this weekend. Although it's, you know, hard to win back-to-back tournaments, much less one of those being the Masters. One of the greatest golfers in the world, and we chatted just a little bit briefly before this podcast, is Justin Thomas. You like him in this tournament. You like him in any tournament, right? But it seems like you've said that you know he gets better at this golf course every time he plays it.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, he's kind of slowly but surely, you know, gotten better. He's the thing with him is he's not putted well enough, and he'll tell you that that's been his thing. And he's sort of slowly but surely, you know, some people it takes a little while to figure this place out. There is a learning curve at Augusta. It's such an intricate course. You know, sometimes it takes a little time. There's a reason why first timers usually don't win. In fact, it's been very rare. You know, he's slowly but surely been figuring it out. I mean, he was fourth in November. He was T12 in 19, T17 before that. Every year, he's, you know, this is his sixth Masters. Each of the first five, he's gotten better every year. And, you know, he just won the Players Championship, which is a course where you've got to be a good iron player, really good second shots. Augusta's a second shot course. You need to, obviously you want to drive it well too, but it's really about where do you put that ball with your second shot to these greens. And he's certainly got the ability to do that.
The player that you said we should watch is Jon Rahm. I guess his wife recently delivered a baby, so that's out of his head.
Right.
You know, Rahm's another guy. Tell me about his game, where it's at right now, and you know, why you like him this weekend.
I just think he's got a game suited to this place. You know, some guys are. I mean, Dustin Johnson's that way too. And early on, it was a mystery why he didn't do better. He's played at 10, Dustin Johnson's played it 10 times, and the first five times he wasn't close. And then now the last five times he's been in the top 10 every time, including a win and a second. And I think Rahm has sort of grasped it quicker. He's had three top 10s in four starts. And, you know, I think that's a good sign. Like he knows what to do here already. He hits it long, hits it far. He's, you know, he's a young guy, only ranked, he's already third in the world. Won last fall, has contended a couple times this year already. So if he's like got his head in the right place after his wife just had a baby, if he views that as a relief rather than, you know, he's stressed by it, then I think he's got a great chance. I think he would have been way more stressed if he'd, because he had said he'll, you know, he would leave. So like she was supposed to be due like next Monday. And so he was ready to leave on a moment's notice if need be. And I would think that would be distracting and it would have been harder to play. But now, you know, that should be past him. I don't think he's missed any tournaments due to it. And, I kind of like him.
Well, there's lots of former champions part of the field too. I'm just glad that we're going to have the Masters where it's supposed to be in April. The course will look beautiful. And Bob Herrig is there. Bob, on ESPN.com, tell me what you're working on that we can look forward to.
Actually, I just wrote something about what we were talking about, the different course conditions, how it's going to be different from November, how it's going to be different over the last several years. It's not been that firm the last few years. That's due to, you know, typically usually due to weather. And now we've got a chance for that, at least if any kind of weather holds off. I did a big piece on DeChambeau, Bryson DeChambeau. He's a different cat. he approaches it different, you know, and looking forward to seeing what he brings, because he hits it so far and he's worked so hard at trying to do that. So it should be fun.
Dude, I watched him on the practice tees, and I swear to you, it was like, I know he lifts weights and he got big, right, to create this head, you know, golf swing speed. But it looked exhausting to me. It looked like a guy who was working out as opposed to trying to play golf. I've never seen anything like this guy practice on the tees. It's unbelievable.
He was doing this drill where he would hit a drive every 10 seconds. Mm. And, you know, it was like, he was like, the caddy was down there teeing him up, and he would just in rapid fire go and swing with all his might. And it'd be like, you know, you'd be gasping for breath and on the ground after about six of them, you know, and I mean, he just got a different look at it. You know, I'm usually, you know, the thought had always been in golf that you didn't want to get too muscular.
Yeah.
You know, flexibility was everything. But man, he put a lot of thought into it with a trainer and all kinds of people. He didn't just start eating. That's part of the story I wrote. He didn't just start, you know, having six protein shakes a day and eating two steaks and all the things that he was doing to gain weight and get bigger. Like they thought that out, and they had this plan to prepare him. And I remember when he talked about it, like in the fall of 19, that he said, look, I'm going away for a while, and I'm going to be putting on about 25 pounds before we see next. And everybody looked at him like, are you kidding me? What are you talking about? You know? And sure enough, man, the guy, and you know what, for the most part, it's worked. He leads a tour in driving distance. You know, he wasn't anywhere close before that. It was probably 25th on tours like that. And, you know, hits these rocket moonshots out there. Now, of course, he's the first to admit there's other parts to it. You know, you gotta hit your approach shots in the right place. You gotta make putts. You gotta be able to chip. And when he can do all that, he's got a great chance.
A lot easier when you're chipping from 75 yards and the other guy is, you know, 125 yards away. But
no question.
It's been fascinating to watch. He's Bob Herrig. You can read him on ESPN.com and a good friend. Bob, thanks so much. Enjoy your week at the Masters.
Thanks, Rick. Take care.
My thanks to Bob Herrig. The Rays are off today. As we mentioned, they will open against the Yankees on Friday. The Lightning are at Columbus again. If they see if they can snap their two-game losing streak, they've lost 5 out of 7. Columbus has always been a tough out for them, but they need to get some goals. I mean, they're in a little bit of a scoring drought right now, so they got to turn that around. And on tomorrow's podcast, my former radio partner Tom Jones will join us for Friday. So for Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.